to practices. So if you listen to number one, then this is kind of just a natural continuation of a deeper conversation around what it means to be a child of the diaspora and navigating spirituality and the expressions of spirituality. If you haven't listened to part one, please go listen to part one. The reason why it's so important is because it sets up the context for this deeper conversation. And if you listen to the parts without like the context of each other, then we run the risk of either misunderstanding or not fully being able to kind of grasp what connection does one have to the other, right? And so that's really super important. And in that first one, there's the conversation around appropriation. There's the conversation around how messy it can be to be someone from another land and finding ourselves here and trying to figure out how do we honor the expression that's coming through us, and how do we connect deeper to our benevolent ancestors and the work that they've done around spirituality and be in ownership of that and trusting the process. What I do want to say about that is what you will not have in here is I will not be teaching on how to connect with your ancestors. And that's a whole body of work separate from this. And so one of the things that I want us to presence in this time is this deeper trust that they are speaking through us, that we are connected by this beautiful thread of memories and depth and belonging. And so in this particular video, what I'm going to talk about are the practices and how do we step into the alchemy of practices and what does that mean? The reason why I won't teach on specific practices is because that is the path that we're all on, the learning of practices, the alchemizing of practices. Some of us have some that are handed down to us. Other of us do not have any connection to practices that are original to our particular ethnic identity or the multiplicity of our ethnic identity for that matter. So before anything, before we step into the teaching, what I want to offer up is my deep gratitude to my benevolent ancestors who are always with me, always speaking and emerging through this iteration of my humanity and being a human. And I'm grateful for their teachings. I'm grateful for their wisdom. I'm grateful for their leadership and also for their support. I also want to name all the dimensions that we live and expand in and have our being in and bless each one of those layers. I also want to call to this space, no matter when you listen to this teaching, the angels from the four corners above and below, kind of like that hold the essence of our divinity and nourish that and are always watching over us. And I'm thanking them for their support in this time. I'm thankful to the divine, to the Shekhinah, to all the expressions, the El Shaddai, all the expressions of what that great I am is. From all the Orisha to all the gods in the Taino cosmology, I'm thankful for the things that have brought me here into this moment. I'm also wanting to presence the land that I actually am renting an apartment on, and it's the land of the Susquehannock tribe, First Nations. And so I'm grateful for their offering, for the tending of this land, and for the grace of allowing me to live here and blessing my time in this space. I also want to thank the river, the Susquehanna River, that is not anything but two blocks down, and the beauty of the river and the teachings that the river continuously is offering and connecting and healing and inviting me to relationship. And so I'm thankful for the river. And so here we are. Three guidelines as you step into space with me that are always kind of the same thing, no matter what space you step into me with. One, everyone's a student teacher. I may be bringing this information to the forefront, but we are all in our agency and choice. We get to decide for ourselves what we take or what we leave, and there is something that you bring to this conversation, although we're not able to have it like, you know, one to another, but that you bring teachings in yourself and beauties and medicines and gifts yourself to this conversation. So know that any dynamic that is here, we are at the same place. There is no hierarchy in this work. We are all in our learning, evolving, and shifting, and our continuous awakening, right? And so I want us to hold that in this space. The second guideline that I want us to hold is take what serves and leave the rest. If there's something that I say that you don't particularly resonate with or feel like you can't, it's not the season for it, you're welcome to put it on the shelf. You are welcome to release it. The only invitation I want to offer you is if you have some resistance to be an inquiry, why you're resisting. Is it because it's not in alignment with what you believe, or is it because it's stretching you past the place? And so that's something that you want to be in curiosity with. And what I'm also going to invite you to do is, if it's edgy, find out why. And give it a fair chance in terms of sitting with and integrating what I'm saying. And finally, 100% responsibility. And what this means is that often enough, we sign up for courses, and the courses may not or may give us what we expect or don't. My hope is that you will find medicine in any part of this video and teaching. And in finding that medicine, you're able to be 100% responsible for the way you're interacting with it and what you're receiving from it. And so that allows us to be in the partnership as I show up and you show up, that we don't have unrealistic expectations, but that we're able to get what we need because we're in deep listening for it ourselves, right? So thank you so much for being here, and let's begin. So one of the things that is super important to me about this conversation is that we become aware of the path that this emergence is. The idea of reconnecting with your ethnicity or your roots in terms of spirituality can be something that's super complicated or maybe super easy. And so what I want you to do and what I want you to have access to as a person is your choice and your agency. And I want you to see already the ways that you are being initiated, the ways you are being taught, the teachers that are showing up in your life, and also a deeper conversation around alchemy. So let's start with initiations and teachers. How do we begin to even decipher a teacher or a path or like a training that we want to take up? Some of the challenges with like arising in our expression of diasporic medicine, which is an evolution, because your ancestors that you come from and that are like kind of at the forefront of your expression may have had a traditional context from which they embodied the spirituality. And there's times that that traditional context is based, again, because it's a contextual thing to their time, their generation, then what tends to happen for us is that we try to live that. And we seek that. We seek something that already was to find our way. And while that may be helpful in terms of structure, the challenge is that we become attached to that and there's no growth and there's no personal embodied alignment with a thing. And what we need to really like let sink into our being is that the power comes from the internal ownership of the spirituality, the internal ownership of the belief system of that truth. And if something is not integrating and is not feeling aligned, you want to ask yourself why and allow yourself to ask questions. Allow yourself to step into a place where you can question. And I almost want to say, you know, be in a relationship in which you get to kind of wrestle with what you're being told is a truth or a timeless thought or a timeless truth or a tradition and the shape of it. So when we're looking at teachers, the first thing we want to look for is one, that they embody with transparency the continuous integration of the spirituality that we are looking at. Often enough, the immediate thing we want to do is go find a teacher, which, again, it's a book, it's a video, it's somebody that you respect and admire. But be mindful of not going outside of yourself to find answers that can only be found within. And this is where we come into a lot of friction and dissonance, because we begin to feel an insufficiency because we don't have enough information or experience that causes us to want to grab a hold of any person or structure that seems like the ideal that we're holding up in our minds. And trust me, there's such a thing of having some idyllic idea of spirituality. So some folks are like, you know, I see myself doing a mortar and a pestle and like giving an offering, you know, at the corner of the mountain by the crossroads. And you have this vision of that devotion and that worship and that service, and you live in the city. Hey, and while you may find places to go, right, there's some challenge between what we imagine is embodied spirituality and what we actually are able to integrate and embody. Because it is a path and a practice and not a finished arrived at journey. So your teachers, whoever they be, transparency is key. Measuring and kind of being in deep listening to the frequency of what they're speaking for agency and personal embodiment. If a teacher speaks in a way that's super absolute, and that everybody has to do this one thing in this certain way at this certain time, right? We want to be mindful of that, because what we tend to do is then we try to fit in that box, because we're perceiving this as being a truth that we need to like fit into and it not work or fit with us. And you see the difference in why some traditions are problematic still today, or thought schools, because what they do is that the ask that they have is that you fit into their box and you fit into this particular ideology or cosmology without even questioning whether it resonates, whether it's contextual for you. And this came to light for me as a young mother trying to be the devoted believer. And back then, I was a Christian, trying to be a devoted believer while having a one-year-old and like a three-year-old and trying to tend to my house and teach my children. I mean, you name it. I was like all up on the Susie Homemaker thing, or like, you know, Little House on the Prairie. I was like big on that, you know, wanted to churn my own butter. And I couldn't seem to fit like into the, like make it happen, or it would never happen exactly. You know, like the baby would need a diaper change. The coat zipper wouldn't come up. We were running late, like just all these things. And I realized at some point, this doesn't make sense, because how can I come from a place of like devotion and love if what I feel is incredible frustration and I'm pushing by force everything to fit into what I thought it was supposed to look like because of what I was taught, right? And so teachings need to have an agency component to them, and so do teachers. And you want to watch that quality. You want to watch the quality of what feels good, what doesn't feel good, and whether or not you can question something. Now, questioning something and being in healthy inquiry with something and with your teacher in conversation and just being facetious are two different things. Now, some folk just like to stir up the pot for the sheer stirring up the pot. That make no sense, right? Because we're trying to get information that we think we need, and it's not conducive to our growth. And we know, because there's no traction. You're not going anywhere, up, down, in between. You're just creating a thing and hand walking away, and there's no expansion that happens with that, or deepening that happens with your relationship with spirituality. So I want you to watch for that. And so you want to be mindful of your teachers in that way and of the body of information they're teaching. I also want you to notice for yourself the way your life has already been speaking, your benevolent ancestors have been speaking, your spirit guides have been speaking, all these things coming together at a crossroad to bring you synchronicity, affirmations about your particular path. And your path involves your life. Your lived experience is part of the story, not separate. If you have to disconnect yourself from like your personal being or part of your stories, that like, again, that's bringing you outside of yourself to be something other than who you are, and other than embracing all the pieces of yourself. So one of the things I've observed is that naturally, because you are already in a practice, we don't name it like that, we don't look at it like that, but that's what it is. Brushing your teeth is a practice. You wake up every day and do the same thing, and then even catch where you're not, you know, it's not happening in the right place. So you do that, you do it differently, you buy a new toothbrush. Right? You practice this thing every day. And so very similarly, there is a practice in your life. There is this way that you are going through transitions and challenges, and you get to this place where it seems confusing and chaotic. And then there's like a breakthrough and you get some clarity around something. And then you're like, ah, yes. This is what meditation feels like to me. It's not sitting on the yoga pillow and, you know, oming. It actually is dancing to music that feels good in my body. And when I'm in that, I'm in a zone and I'm not thinking, I'm not actively thinking, I'm actually releasing through an embodied expression. That's meditation to me. And that's something that I want you to observe, that is also, and when we're open to it being an embodied experience, spirituality and practices, then we are not looking for a cookie cutter, hand me, this is what I'm supposed to look like. Or we're not looking at, oh my goodness, I don't measure up to this person who seems to have it together, or whatever the language you want to use around that. To me, this is super important, because what tends to happen is that we come out of ourselves and try to mirror or mimic someone else. And then have all this like shame, all this guilt, all this like feeling like we're not enough because it doesn't look like whoever. The biggest thing you could ever do is to honor your own particular path and the initiations within that. Whether that initiation comes after raising 4 kids or going through toddler age or phase or stage, or going through mid-teens age or phase or stage, that is your initiation into another season, a deepening of your own understanding of your relationship to that which is divine, which is a relationship. It's a two-way street. It's you and whatever you believe your source to be. It's you and nature. It's you and the elements. It's you and the crystals. Like, you and whatever you're doing have a relationship, and not so much as this like operative structure. Like, this and this and this is what you do. You know, we talk about discipline being something that you do no matter what, how you're feeling. And we definitely moved into a season and kind of a mindset of doing things we only feel right. But what we're really trying to get at is that discipline and the energetic frequency of the discipline needs to be aligned, because that is self-motivating and driving. Like, I want to show up in this way. This is who I want to be in relationship with this particular practice. So I'm going to show up for it. I'm going to be present to it. And today, this morning, you know, I feel a little bit more tired and I want to be present to this particular thing because of the relationship I have with it. This is my offering to it. And in return, this is what I receive from it. And it's mutual. And so when you're going through initiatory processes, they are giving you a gift. The universe is giving you a gift, or whatever your cosmology is, again, giving you a gift of knowing yourself in a deeper way in relationship to spirituality. And it's not going to look the same way your ancestors manifested it. Because any teaching, any tradition, any religion must evolve with the generation in which it's present. There is a thing as timeless truths that do continue to operate, and they must be applied to a present embodiment, which looks different than what our ancestors had. So anybody remember a beeper or the big ass cell phones? Now we're working with one of these iPhone buddies, and they're slim, they hold everything, all the pieces, like they remind us of stuff, it even talks to us, and we could talk to it, entirely different context, right? And so we have a lot of this like regret, well, you know, things are changing, people are always on their phones. Yes, and things must evolve. And we must figure out our context within that evolution. And it's the same thing for your spiritual practice. It's the same thing. I need to move back a little here. It's the same thing for your spiritual practice and your embodiment of a thought school or your embodiment of a tradition. It must grow and it must shift, right? And so one of the questions that come up with this is like, well, how do we honor if we don't have the same tools or we don't have the same information? That's where there's a trusting in, and why agency is so important. Because you have to trust in your internal beacon, the embodiment of your light and your fire, that through that your ancestors are constantly speaking, your benevolent ones, and evolving and teaching you. So maybe you don't feel like using hawk feathers, and maybe what you resonate is to another bird's feathers that you keep on finding along a path every time you go for a walk. And maybe you make yourself a smudge wand out of that. Maybe you're using something else instead of, maybe you're using Palo Santo instead of sage. For all the context that everybody has and the traditions that everybody speaks of, you just feel this particular alignment, like something inside of you telling you to use Palo Santo instead of sage. And our response ability is to be in listening and alignment with that. That's different than doing whatever the fuck you want, however the fuck you want to do it kind of thing, right? Like, oh, this is what, this, I'm just going to do this. This is not transactional, this is relational. And this is where these pieces become important. So what I'm noticing, and what I've noticed in my observation over a decade, two decades of like being in my own different types of practices, having my own different types of struggles, witnessing others, being in conversation with others, is that the thing that you think you should be, you have been all along, but it just looks different in you. And you have to trust that. And so what happens is we have all these like emergings or these things that we see in another that we desire, and we're like, oh man, that is so beautiful, like the level of devotion, or that they cover their head, or this or that or another, and so on and so forth. Something about that resonates in our soul. And we feel a connection to it. We want to be in inquiry around the connection. We want to be in deep listening, and then we want to be in relationship, not transaction, with a practice or an embodiment of a practice. And so what tends to happen for folks, for us, most of us, right? We go through these seasons and cycles of solitude. It's like being in a desert. And I can't tell you, I've experienced this myself, and there's others that have experienced it, where it's like either they're part of a community and then they kind of like move off on their own, or they start out alone and eventually move into a community. And to me, my understanding around this particular like piece of the path is that this is the opportunity for you to exercise those muscles of agency, ownership, and like solidarity and belief with yourself, your yes. Because when we skip this particular part, We're looking for people to co-sign and agree with us. We're looking for people to be exactly what we are, or for us to be what they are. Or we tend to actually deny, suppress, repress any particular emerging. So we're living with a longing and almost in pain because we don't feel like we identify with anybody, and then we don't want to just start doing shit because that looks messy, and we don't want to be messy, and we don't want to be chaotic. And now chaos is a little different than the messy that it can be. Things are not all the time uniform because we are evolving as we speak. Right now. And now. And now. Right? Like, each moment is different, and we must evolve and shift. And we do that dimensionally so that in all the dimensions, we're evolving, changing, shifting, and staying the same, right? And so that's always like a mind fuck, so we won't go there. But it's giving ourselves compassion, grace, generosity around what our particular path is. And when we're in the desert by ourselves, the gift of solitude, you're not alone, because whatever your belief system is, there's always support for you to find your way home. And when we meet each other and we're like, oh, I recognize you, it's because that's a reflection of the home in us. And we need to come back home. If a teaching, an initiation process, a tradition, or a thought system does not bring you back home, we're headed in an unhealthy direction that breeds codependency, insecurity, trauma, fear, because we put our power and our agency in another. Across all traditions, there is this part of having choice and agency and saying yes, your yes to you, your yes to the divine, or however you're looking at that. And that is part of initiation. That is part of any healthy embodied tradition or spiritual practice, is that when you confront it and you face it, you say yes, and you become a student of that. There must be a consensual engagement between you and whatever you take on as a practice. It must be consensual. When there's consent and when there's agency, there is an honor offered. And it's not transaction consumerist grab. Like, oh, I'm just going to do this meditation because this Buddha did it whoever long ago, and it seemed to work for them, and it just feels nice, and, you know, whatever, that's what I'm going to do, without holding, and this is in the first video, without holding accountability to the community and to the traditions and to the people whom this is birthed out of. But to just take and go, and that is transaction and not relationship. And we are called to be in relationship with our surroundings or anything we engage in. So, having said that, there's always a solitude process of the path for most folks. And it's in that solitude that you get to hear and be in listening for yourself. It's in that solitude that you learn about yourself in relationship to the spiritual practice. It's in that you become a student and teacher, because you begin to explore with the resonance and the frequency that's internally. And that's what we magnetize, right? It's like there's this internal resonance, and then we begin to like, oh, this feels so good. This, something about this makes me feel so complete. Right? It's the way I make sofrito. It's the way I make adobo. It's the way I cook the rice. It is in the way I set up my morning. It is in the cup that I use for my café. And while I drink creamer with my café, my ancestors drank their coffee straight, it's different, but the tradition lives on, and I have my own expression of it. So it belongs inside of me. I don't need anybody to tell me about it. I don't need anybody to be like, did you drink your coffee, as an example, because it's naturally connective and it's part of my exploratory practice with my ancestral benevolent medicine. So there's always this solitude time because it helps us build the muscles where no matter what comes, we own and are in alignment in our own agency and our own choice over who we are in this. So we don't pedestal teachers. We don't pedestal anything because we understand it's humanity and we can be in right relationship with it. That changes everything. So you don't go, if, for example, I'm finally taking a training now after so many years, and there were particular tools in this training that I would, you know, felt right aligned to engage. And it's a tradition that's running through my blood and feels in alignment with me. And I'm like, okay, this is what I want to. And I had to wait for something that resonated at this particular level in terms of it being aligned with what would have been practiced from my benevolent ancestors. And so when it finally came along, I have healthy relationships with my teachers, healthy relationships with my community, because I don't have expectations of perfection. I don't have expectations of mastery. I don't have expectations of any of that. I have expectations that we're all transparently showing up and we're working it out and learning it and living it and course correcting and coming back around and really feeling into resonance and listening for what is aligned and what may not be aligned. Is I don't need to like badge my teacher over the head. I'm like, all right, that makes sense for you. It doesn't make sense for me, but I can appreciate that that's your expression. There's no comparison. There is no, I haven't arrived because it doesn't look like that. I understand that my medicine is my own. And whether or not I am initiated or ordained as a priestess, I am already. It is something that's been in me ever since the beginning. So I don't have to, I'm not waiting for anybody to give me that approval. And that is something that the desert gave me. That is something that the solitude gave me. That is something that the initiatory processes in my own life as an expression of growing me and bringing me into the fullness of my magic, my healing, and kind of the way I channel this divine like work and or this divine expression and devotion to my community and to all that supports me. The way I do that, I'm in ownership of it. And also, there's so much capacity and space for it to change and look differently as experience and time pass. What a generous way to live. What a holy, sacred thing, holy as in complete in itself, this is. What was missing was you, your belief in yourself, your belief in that you are an expression of this particular spiritual embodiment. And you are enough, no matter what season or stage you're going through. So when we're looking at that and we're talking about alchemizing practices so that you're showing up in your unique path, this is why I use the word practice. Because it takes time and it takes trying and it takes kind of like wrestling. And no, this doesn't feel quite right. And no, I'm not going to get up at 5 a.m. to meditate or pray. It's not going to happen. But guess what? When I do get up and I go to the kitchen and make myself, I'm already thinking and I'm already like sending light and energy to the people I love and healing. I'm thinking about them all day. I'm sending them Reiki or I'm sending them this. I already, when I'm preparing food, there's such a gratitude for where it comes from. I'm much more conscious about things. There's that. And then there's the, I only have TV dinners in my freezer, but when I sit down and eat it, I really am in gratitude that I have a roof over my head, right? Like, the practices come, excuse me, as you open yourself up to it, as you begin to notice. And as time passes by, you're like, oh my goodness, yes, technology. Oh my gosh, this is like an incredible platform, a space where we put so much energy out and so much energy comes through. So guess what? I don't know. I feel like I'm going to turn off my phone at this time, or these are the practices I'm going to have around this so that I can feel aligned with my time or my contribution in this space. Like, practices come from a place of being in relationship. If I use this amethyst, I don't just grab this amethyst and I'm like, okay, I just want you to do this for me. I activate your guarding, your third eye, your crown chakra, blah, 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 blah. There, I'm done. What, where do you come from? Who are you? Were you brought out of the earth, because I can't think of that word right now, brought out of the earth with awareness, with kindness, compassion? Was there an offering? Who sourced you? With what attitude did they source you with? They pulled you from Great Mother. You are a representation of Great Mother. What does that look like? When I buy my crystals, who am I buying them from? And is that person moving with a conscious awareness? Because this is not a transaction. This is a relationship with amethyst. And guess what? While you read this relationship, we read the books, which is fine. But then we must build the relationship and we go, okay, what I sense is that amethyst is being this for me. Oh, that's not your experience of it. That's wonderful. I feel like for me, this is what it's being for me. And I'm so grateful because you're in relationship with it. Somebody else has an amethyst and they're like, no, well, what I understand is that amethyst is such and so on. Wonderful. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. And I feel like for me, right, for you, this is how you're in relationship with it. And that's building relationship. That is building a practice that is healthy and that evolves over time because it evolves with your internal awareness. And that's what I want most for all of us. I want us to own our agency and our choice around our relationship with spirituality. I want us to move in a way that's relational and not transactional. I want us to stop engaging in behaviors and in ways that we seek another to fill what we are responsible for looking within ourselves and finding, because you possess it. You are a unique expression of the divine, and we need your unique expression to create a collective fabric that heals the whole. It's not a cookie cutter thing, because we all have our pieces that we bring to the table. And this is really important. So I want you to understand the importance and the sacredness of your medicine and how you bring it forth. And that there is no comparison. There is nothing to compare it to because it's a unique expression. And my hope is that during this teaching and this class, you're able to engage practices from a relational place and from a place of like super agency and accountability for how you're engaging with Palo Santo, how you're engaging with prayer or physical practice and embodiment. And know that practices cannot only stay in the esoteric dimensions, but must come into your body and be lived out. Because that's how it brings healing. That's how it creates relationship in our communities. And then you bring and share this offering of your being connected. And you bring the medicine that helps others come back home to themselves as well. I want your devotion to be clear for you. I want that as you're walking this path, as a child of the diaspora, being in another land, that as you seek to connect back to your roots and the multiplicity of that and or the simplicity of it, that you can do it from relationship, that you can do it from a place of understanding that it is in you, not outside of you, and that whatever you do outside of you should be a reminder of what's in you. Because that's what practice is about. That's what having, if you do crystals or if you do, it's not just like having these possessions, but it's because you're in relationship with them, because you are co-creating, because you are teacher, student, student, teacher. This crystal is learning as much about me and my frequency as I'm learning about it and its frequency. So my hope for you is that through all these pieces, you're able to create a full evaluation when you're taking on a teaching, when you're taking on a thought process or a school of thought. How we're going to decolonize is by getting to the essence of the teaching, the essence of the practice. And we're going to pull the layers off so that we can get to that juicy place where we understand, oh, the reason why I light candles is because I'm connected to the eternal flame. And it reminds me to, like, I observe Shabbat. And so I can light candles, which is a tradition that I think is gorgeous and beautiful. It marks a separation of time. Before, it was because that was the form of light. now we have regular light, and so some of us practice in that way and others don't. But if I don't get to light Shabbat candles, I know the essence of Shabbat as well, because it's something in here in which I get to create a relationship of rest with, and ease and sovereignty. And not sovereignty in its colonialist classic terms, but the sovereignty that is agency filled. That I'm able to be in relationship with the practice that I'm choosing. So you get a worksheet with this that will be below. And it's a simple questions, just questions. Add to these questions if you think of something much more deeper that you want to excavate out of something. But it's really about decolonizing and looking at things and observing before we take them on so that we understand. Because when we start looking at inaccessibility in terms of cost, in terms of access to a process or a practice, literally, like some traditions have initiatory groups that involve so much money that it's scary. And has a hierarchy that is unhealthy, that defers power continuously. We want to reevaluate that contextually. We want to look at its health. We want to look at harm. We want to be able to look at these pieces before we say, I'm going to take on this learning. We also want to look at the ways that if, and this was a question that came up, if we have, for example, in some of our traditions, we may have an herb that belongs to another tradition, but because of colonizing, because of like travel, because of introductions and merchant ships back in the day, this particular herb was introduced to our people. How do we engage in that? And that's like Palo Santo can be an example of that. And so what we can do is find out about its origins. And then what we see is like, okay, this particular thing resonates for me. I'm not exactly super clear on why it feels so powerful for me. But in honor of the land that it comes from, the people that it comes from, the amount to, that it costs to travel, like all of those pieces, I'm going to contribute to this particular people, this particular culture, I don't know, 10% or 5% or whatever, right? Like I'm going to commit to integrating what I can into the people from where this comes from, to honor what they've given, the medicine that they've given. And this is the best way I can do it. Like I can share on social media and I can give support in some other way so that there's thriving, there's sustainability, there's honor, there's integrity in the exchange. And again, not coming from a consumerist place. And this is something I'm constantly like in the practice of and getting deeper in my practice of like the sources of things and what's the relationship to them. And it can be at times a lot. And when that happens, come back and center. And one thing at a time. And that's why a practice is so powerful. The word practice is so powerful. It releases us from this idea of having it all together undone. And it also holds us accountable for how we're engaging and processing and moving. So I offer that to you as something to ponder and consider. Thank you for the deep honor of being with me in this class. I hope that it is medicine throughout all your generations, and I look forward to your rising. With the deepest, abundant love as a priestess of liberation, I am your comadre, and I will talk to you soon again. Thank you so much.